This week we dive into a philosophical debate. Why is a Masonic lodge called a temple sometimes and a lodge other times? Then we put on a pair of spectacles called Freemason glasses, and we take a look at one of history's most enigmatic and mysterious items, the Sphinx in Egypt. What do we know about the Sphinx from a Masonic perspective? All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 624. I want to thank our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. You guys are the reason we are able to do this show, and I am so grateful to you all for your assistance. If you've been listening to this show any length of time, you know this is listener-supported Masonic education. And if you've ever asked yourself, how can I assist the podcast? Well, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out the various options. We've also got a shop, a bookstore, Skull and Crown Limited, and a number of other ways to help support the show. And heck, if you can't, share the show with your friends. Share us on Facebook, on Instagram, wherever. Masonic Week, coming up in February, right around the corner. I'll be at the venue Friday and Saturday, just doing my normal Allied Masonic degrees duties, as well as hanging out with some dear friends and brothers. If you're there, you see me, stop on by, say hello. If I see you, I'll do the same. Now, some time ago, I asked myself the question. What was the question? Well, let me go all the way back to the day I was at a luncheon when I met my first Freemason brothers. It was before I was even a member. I had gone to an inquisitive sort of luncheon. Some Masons met for lunch at a local restaurant, and I went because I was curious, and they had invited me. I remember saying, joining the lodge, attending the lodge, and I remember one gentleman, one brother, saying, temple. It's a temple. And it had me curious. I course-corrected during that conversation to refer to it as he had mentioned it, a temple, Masonic temple, that is, and it had always stuck in my brain. Why we have references to our buildings as either lodges or temples, and depending on the flavor of Masonic reading that you're into, it is frequently called either or. This question came up just a few years ago, and I believe our brother, Alex Powers of the Historical Life podcast, and the architect of Masonicon Kansas, which, FYI, get on the list, follow it on Facebook. This year's Masonicon Kansas is going to be a big deal. Anyway, so Alex had a similar question, which was the same as mine. Why is it in our older books on Masonry do we call it a temple when later, it's called a lodge? Does this have something to do with perhaps the public image of Masonry? Maybe a temple was too weird after the Morgan affair, so we decided to call it a lodge to demystify it. What's going on there? And I went back into the Grand Lodge of Illinois, and I searched all of the transactions from every year that we had annual communications, our GLAC, Grand Lodge Annual Communications. I searched all of the legislation and everything that had happened in those years and found no references to temple v. lodge or vice versa. I do think Alex had found some information. However, all that aside, I was scoping the internet recently, and I found an article that I wanted to read for you. And it's labeled under the esotericism tag, and the article is called The Real Reason a Masonic Temple is Called a Lodge. And this is published on the philosophicalsociety.org and was published back in October of 2018. Let's check out this article and see what we can glean from this. Why is a Masonic temple called a lodge? This is a very good question, and the correct answer to this question is full of valuable wisdom that is of great and essential importance to Freemasons in particular, and to philosophers in general. So, let us begin to unravel this mystery so that we can discover some of the useful life lessons that it has in store for us as philosophers, or as lovers of wisdom. All students of Freemasonry know that Freemasonry is of a symbolic nature, and that most of the foundational customs and symbols of Freemasons are derived from the work of the stonemasons of ancient Egypt and other ancient countries. The universal Masonic custom of referring to our temples or meeting places as lodges is an example of one of these fundamental customs and symbols of Freemasonry that come from ancient stone masonry. Unfortunately, too many students of Freemasonry fail to realize that the soul or spirit of Freemasonry is essentially religious, philosophical, and spiritual. This causes the students to lack knowledge of the true and intended meaning of most of our Masonic symbols, and to unknowingly give a false interpretation to not only our symbols, but to Freemasonry as a whole. This is most often a result of the student limiting his studies to a trash heap of purposefully misleading books and articles on the history and subject of Freemasonry that have been published by unqualified, overly pretentious, and overtly biased, self-proclaimed, quote-unquote, authorities on the subject. However, this lack of true understanding of Freemasonry is primarily due to the student making the costly mistake of overlooking the significance of the simple fact that the work of ancient stone masonry, which Freemasonry uses as an analogy or symbol of its own work and teachings, was centered around religion and philosophy, which is to say, the worship and study of Mother Nature, ourselves, and the divine. As the old saying goes, the true nature of a tree can be known by the kind of fruit it produces, and the ancient stonemasons, not to be confused with brick masons, who were of many different cultures, nationalities, and religions, were the builders and creators of all of the most important buildings of the ancient world, which were the temples and monuments dedicated to the gods and goddesses of ancient religion. By overlooking this aspect of the nature of the work of ancient stone masonry, the non-Masonic student of Freemasonry usually misses the point that Freemasonry is likewise centered around God, the supreme architect of the universe. The religious, philosophical, and spiritual nature of Freemasonry is the reason as to why the meeting place of any group of Freemasons is called a temple, which is defined in everyday language as being a building devoted to the worship or regarded as the house or dwelling place of a god or gods. On the other hand, a Masonic temple, as was already mentioned, is also called a lodge, and this is because ancient stone masons, who were literally travelers or traveling men and traveling women, due to the nature of their work, which often required them to leave behind their families and homes for long periods of time, as they traveled from place to place and worked on various building projects all throughout the country or the world, would always build several temporary houses called lodges near their work site, which they used as both shelters and workshops. Although this obviously gives us the superficial reason for which we symbolically call our temples lodges, it would be very unwise of us to automatically conclude that this is the reason for this ancient universal custom in its entirety, since we know that Freemasonry is essentially philosophical and spiritual and uses its symbols as its main method of teaching and expressing important life lessons that are based on timeless philosophical principles and truths. It is, therefore, very highly likely that the word lodge is a Masonic symbol that indirectly expresses a very deep and fundamental lesson for us about the true nature of our existence. Since the word lodge is synonymous with the word temple, in the symbolic language of Freemasonry, we must logically conclude that they both symbolically refer to the human body as the house that God lives in. As is said in 1 Corinthians 3:16 of the Holy Bible, which is another one of the many symbols of Masonic philosophy and spirituality, quote, "Do you not know that you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God lives in you?" By applying the Masonic and Hermetic principle of correspondence, as within, so without, which is a universal law of nature, to the human body, we discover that the human body can be symbolically and very accurately described as being a miniature replica of the universe, or existence as an infinite whole. This lets us know that the Masonic temple or the Masonic lodge is a symbol of both the universe and the human body. And this is very powerfully hinted at us in the symbolic description of the lodge in the ritual of Freemasonry's first degree. Now that we know that the Masonic lodge is symbolic of both the universe and the human body, and that Freemasonry thereby likens or compares the universe and the human body to a lodge of ancient stonemasons, all that remains is for us to figure out why this is so. Once again, a lodge, by common definition, is a temporary house or home, as opposed to a permanent house or home, which would make a lodge a very fitting symbol of the universe, since the universe is not only the house and home of humanity, but a temporary house and home for us, as we will not be living in this world forever. We will all one day die, but until then we must continuously come together and unite as Freemasons to do the work of Freemasonry, which is to evolve and perfect humanity within the lodge or workshop, meaning within the universe or world of everyday life. This is perhaps the most basic of all of the valuable lessons that we are indirectly taught by the Masonic Lodge, being a symbol of the universe or the macrocosm, the big universe. When we look at the Masonic Lodge as being a symbol of the human body, or the microcosm, the little universe, we learn an equally valuable lesson. In the same way that the universe is a temporary house and home for humanity, so is the human body for the Spirit of God. And just as we must continuously come together and unite as Freemasons to do the work of Freemasonry within the workshop or lodge of the universe collectively, so must we also do the work of Freemasonry on an equally constant basis individually within the secret inner lodge or workshop of ourselves as individuals, thereby achieving balance and harmony between the two opposite poles of selflessness and selfishness within us. As we can now see, the use of the word lodge as a symbol of Freemasonry contains some very useful and valuable life lessons for us indeed. So let us take heed, and let us continue to work both collectively and individually, but most important of all, unceasingly, toward the evolution and perfection of humanity. A note to the reader, for a deeper understanding of the Masonic and Hermetic principle of correspondence, which is mentioned in this article, and to help expand the great work of Masonic Philosophical Society, you can purchase the book, The Kabbalion, from the UniversalPhilosophicalSociety.org. So, a couple of thoughts I had on this, which are, number one, the reference back to the lodge or temple as the human body. This is not really something that is up for debate, the ritual tells us so, but yet it still seems to be something that is what I think many Masons consider a fringe idea, which is interesting considering those same brothers are the ones who are reciting the ritual to others, which cite this exactly. And it's not even a matter of interpretation. It's just the exact way that it is described in the Masonic ritual. The other part of this that I find enlightening, in that it helps me think about this differently, is not so much a tangible reason of why we would refer to it as a lodge or a temple, but to almost take a step back and objectively look at it as just another part of the symbolic use of language as it relates to Freemasonry. I think I've asked this before, but it would be interesting to know in recent times if you have any interesting ideas or stories about the temple versus the lodge. Which is it? How does your local masonry refer to it? I know in some cases it's interesting as well to think that we have, you know, a lodge or a number of lodges meeting in a single building, and these aren't usually called, like, lodge corporations. They're usually defined as the blank temple corporation, which is interesting. Next up, I wanted to read a piece revolving around the Sphinx. This was published just over 13 days ago, I believe, and it's called Deciphering the Sphinx from a Masonic Perspective. The image that was posted within the article caught my eye because it reminded me of some dubious photographs that I've seen of the Sphinx where the top of the head has some sort of an opening where people can go into it, and that this has supposedly been doctored in some way. But I don't think that's what this article is about. That's just what caught my eye. And then I thought, gee whiz, as a very, very amateur student of Egyptology and Egyptian religion and things, essentially what I can read from the books that I've purchased, I really love A.E. Wallace Budge, as he writes in such a way that allows me to comprehend things easier. I'd never really thought about the Sphinx in a Masonic perspective, considering a lot of the factual information that we have about it, the information that comes from years and years of scientific discovery, archaeological discovery. The most accurate timelines I believe that exist show that the Sphinx was something else, and has the heads been recarved a few times, hence its smaller nature. And then, of course, there are what are known as fringe theories, like Dr. Robert Schock's thought that the Sphinx is much, much older due to the erosion patterns on the rock. And I'm not really sure how somebody can call it fringe when rock erodes a certain way over a certain time, and if that points to something, then that really should be looked at as fact. So I know about the Sphinx in a Egyptology sort of way. I know about it in a scientific sort of way, historical sort of way, but I've never thought about it again in a Masonic perspective. So let's check this out. This is by Brother McDown, 33rd Degree. Deciphering the Sphinx from a Masonic Perspective. The Sphinx of ancient Egypt lay buried beneath the sands for centuries after the fall of the mighty dynasties who built them. Discovered once again in the Napoleonic Age, they have surfaced once more to speak their silent secrets. What hidden wisdom can the Freemason derive from their study? What animal has four legs in the morning, two at noon, and three at night? The Sphinx poses this riddle in the play Oedipus Rex by Sophocles. The clever king, Oedipus, guessed the answer. It's a human being who crawls when a baby, stands on two legs as an adult, and walks with a stick in old age. The riddle made me contemplate the rather sobering journey of human existence. For thousands of years, the Egyptian mystery schools used the symbol of the Sphinx to denote certain qualities of perfected humans, superdeveloped beings, adepts, and holy masters. Even today, the Sphinx remains one of the most mysterious symbols of antiquity. It is found in multiple cultures, including the Egyptian, Greek, Assyrian, Persian, Zoroastrian, and is written about in the Bible and the Book of Ezekiel. The Sphinx is a mythical creature commonly portrayed with the head of a human, the body of a bull, and the paws of a lion, and the wings of an eagle. In Royal Arch Masonry, these are displayed as the four living creatures. The Sphinx is often placed on the pillars of the temple as a guardian and a model upon which searchers for light must base the construction of their character. Sphinxes are enigmatic and inscrutable. How does a Freemason decipher their mystery? Can its wisdom lead the seeker on a path to perfection? According to the book A Treatise on White Magic by Alice Bailey, There is an important message about the Sphinx written on the halls of initiation, which she writes about as follows, quote, "To will, to know, to dare, and to be silent has a special significance, not hitherto revealed, and at which it is only possible for me to hint. Those of you who have the inner knowledge will comprehend at once," end quote. This statement definitely sparked my curiosity. What does it mean? Well, let's take one phrase at a time to then speculate on the conjoined significance. To will is represented by the body of a bull. It means to have determination and perseverance. Our life purpose is intimately related to our willpower, which produces action. To be skilled in the craft of masonry requires study and practice and hard labor. It takes courage to look outside of what's needed for the greater good and the evolution of mankind. To be like a bull is associated with Taurus and the element of earth. Esoterically, these words relate to the unification of soul and the lower nature, and it concerns the chakra at the base of the spine. To know represents the head of a human and refers to the idea that the spiritual and Masonic journey is one of knowledge, and that knowledge is never ending. We are to seek the truth, no matter how difficult the search or the revelations may be. Most importantly, a Mason first learns to know thyself before the true path can be known. To be like the head of a human is to be associated with Aquarius and the element of air. Alice Bailey relates, quote-unquote, to know to the Ajna chakra, and an esoteric hint lies in the words, "Let the mother know the father." To dare represents the paws of the lion. The lion is a symbol of courage. It can be interpreted as having the courage we need to grow spiritually. Fortitude is one of the four cardinal virtues of a Mason. The craftsman becomes familiar with fortitude and the lion's paw at a certain stage of their journey. From the hand of a trusted brother, the candidate is raised to a higher level of spiritual understanding, and with the strength so gained, moves into a realm far outside the terrestrial. To be like a lion is associated with Leo and the element of fire. Esoterically, there is a connection with the solar plexus chakra, the clearinghouse of desire and astral forces. To be silent is represented by the wings of the eagle. It seems like it should be an obvious one, but it's a bit more complex than it appears on the surface. To be certain, to be silent could mean to a Freemason that we need to never reveal the Masonic secrets. It also means that we need to learn the value of inner silence. It is a rare person indeed who recognizes that sometimes the unspoken is more important than the words we utter. To be like the wings of an eagle is associated with Scorpio and the element of water. Esoterically, the phrase corresponds to the sacral chakra, which needs to relapse into silence for the true creative work to take place. My sense is that when the four esoteric maxims are mastered as a formula, we represent in truth the full manifestation of divine nature. A true master is one who becomes a master of his own life and rules and governs the forces of his nature accordingly. Perfection is not only a philosophical concept, but an inherently Masonic principle. Within the divine creation, as humans, we are reflections of the one divinity, facets of the one immortal self. It is our destiny to actualize the talents that we have been endowed with. The candidate for each Masonic degree is granted a chance for introspection, to reflect upon his life lessons and how they have guided him along this road to perfection. Moreover, he is also asked to take vows and given an opportunity to recommit to his higher purpose. Perfection is a special human pursuit. Many of us seek it, but can it be actually attained? We may get closer, but with a lot of mistakes. This return to our original pristine state of deity's creation is often likened to a refiner's fire. As we might ascertain the purity of gold by burning off impurities, so too may we encounter our truest selves as we remove the obstacles in life. This rendering away of irregularities to recapture that which is pure and pristine can also be compared to the masterpiece of which every stone sculptor dreams. While the operative mason uses the mallet and chisel, the speculative mason engages in the refining process, using the mind as a tool through study and an open exchange of ideas. In the final analysis, I believe the Freemasons are called upon to pursue perfection because we can be enabled to improve not only ourselves, but the entire world. What matters ultimately are not our collections of titles, experiences, regalia, or degrees. The great architect of the universe simply desires that we rediscover the reason for our place on Earth. Why are we here? Whether we have four legs, three, or two, it is for us to decisively act upon that sure knowledge that human existence has a purpose. The riddle of the Sphinx actually should jar one back to this humbling realization. Perhaps the greatest riddle of the Sphinx is the Sphinx itself. How do you decipher the riddle of the Sphinx? Brother McDowell, 33rd degree. An interesting idea, assigning those different virtues to the Sphinx. That's it for this week. I want to thank our supporters, our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners. Without you, again, we cannot make this program, so head on over to WCYpodcast.com. Click on Support the Show to check out the various options and see how you can assist. And until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
Yeah.